Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello everybody, welcome to edition 282 of the NRF1 podcast. As you can probably tell by the dulcet surroundings and background noise, I'm sure you're here. We are back in the Rush Cutters pub, the one and only. I'm here with Kyle Cummers. We're sat down at a table, just the two of us with a nice pint. We're waiting for some food. You happy to be back in the pub, Kyle?
Yeah, it's been a while. It feels a bit back to normal. We're at table 43. I was trying to think of an F1 driver that 43.
Lando's four, isn't it? Who's three?
Ricardo?
He's isn't he? Yeah, so it's the McLaren. We'll call it McLaren table.
We're at the McLaren table. It's worth it because it's been a while since we've done a podcast. But we've had two Austria races in between, the Styrian Grand Prix and then the actual Austrian Grand Prix. To be honest, they're both very similar to each other, apart from, I think, the big difference from the first to second. Super Lando, where did he come from?
Well, he was sort of... I mean, he's fairly good in the first one, Styrian Grand Prix. He's probably Super Lando. Then he was Super Lando in the second one. We seem to... He was, putting his car in a place that didn't seem to deserve to be. There's a big contrast between... First race, he seemed to be happy to let people by. This one, he seemed quite feisty and wanted his podium position, which he got in the end. Also, his qualifying lap was just wow, free.
Yeah, it's not every day you get a McLaren within a tenth of a second of a Red Bull, is it?
No.
I mean, he pulled something out there.
Yeah, and especially a Max Verstappen Red Bull around the Red Bull room, to put it that close, was unbelievable. And he's making poor Danny Rick look pretty average at the moment, which is not, which we know, but it just shows how good. You can't really call him last lap Lando now because he's every lap Lando.
Yeah, that's true. And it was it the first or second weekend that he got a new contract, didn't he? They signed him up to a longer term contract, McLaren, I think.
Yeah, there's been quite a bit of F1 news the last few weeks, so yeah, he's got a new 3-year deal, isn't he? So it seems it's just this year he's always fairly decent. He's been quick. He's just taken another step, and he now he's sort of pushing the top drivers in the paddock now. So it's all good for British motorsport from a biased point of view.
Well it's good because obviously we'll go further into depth with the Austrian Grand Prix. But it is the Silverstone Grand Prix, the British Grand Prix, in just a few days' time. So Formula One is coming home. It's come home, we should say, because they're already here. Because it is a Wednesday we're recording this, so I'm sure they're already there. Ready for the media days on Thursday anyway, isn't it? So
yeah, so busy day for Hamilton and Norris and Russell tomorrow. But it's not us being over the top, biased Brits by F1's coming home, but it's just a bit of a a joke based on the Euros. But everyone is, you know, everyone's coming home. But yeah, not being, you know, what's the word? Over the top about it. But it's one of my favourite sporting weekends of the year. So looking forward to it. And also, I think the weather is supposed to be scorching.
Another scorcher. I mean, Austria, there was all the talk of rain, like for both races. Oh, it could rain, and then it just didn't. It just went away.
I was told. Well, you read the Styrian Grand Prix, Austria won. That rain was guaranteed. You know, and I think I can't remember if there was any rain, but I think there's a few spits in P2, I think, in the second Austria race. But it doesn't look like it'll be rain this weekend. But you know, we've got a slightly different weekend as well with a sprint race, and we'll see if that throws up any unusual results or grid positions.
Yeah, definitely. And it's worth saying, obviously, both Austrian Grand Prix were dominated by Mighty Max, as I'm going to call him, I think. But just, he absolutely walked it. It was typical kind of... It's the sort of drive of a world champion. I'm going to say that.
Yeah, it was... sort of Vettel-esque of his time at Red Bull, wasn't it? And the years we won, I can't remember the year now. Was it 12 or whatever? We won the last
11 and 13 were the ones. Yeah, 11 and 13 Vettel really dominated.
Yeah, one of those years he won like 8 of the last 9 races or something stupid. And I remember sort of probably was 13 because I remember sitting at the podcast and sort of saying it wasn't for Vettel, the racing would be quite good for second place. But it was very Vettel-esque to sort of get in the head and just control the race. And with the first race, probably Hamilton was a bit closer. He kind of thought, well, was there a chance? But he sort of dropped off. And then the second race was just miles ahead. You didn't really see him, which is a sign of just dominating. But it was probably a tough few weeks for Mercedes sitting there watching that, thinking, I don't really know how we're going to get back at him. But especially for Hamilton as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the one thing that stood out was the Mercedes, the steering Grand Prix, the first one, they just kind of had one Mercedes in the fight, which was Hamilton just cruising around in second. Bottas wasn't really anywhere fighting for anything. But the second race, Bottas kind of came back a bit. And I mean, he drove pretty well.
Yeah, he sort of... First Grand Prix, I remember that. First Grand Prix, I think his normal sort of style of pretty decent in practice and in qualifying. But yeah, I think him and Perez were 20 odd seconds behind Hamilton. Class apart really for that race. But Bottas came back in the second race. Obviously Hamilton had his damage, which Mercedes told us was half a second to 7/10, I think they worked out. But which apparently wasn't Hamilton's fault either. So I wondered if it was his fault by running wide or whatever, but apparently it wasn't. It was just a bit of wear and tear, which is a slight worry. You kind of think of it.
Very strange, not even halfway through the season, and the car's just getting wear and tear. But hopefully it's a part there that they're going to update, and it could just make him better.
Yeah, and we've had the last few weeks, we've had varying reports of whether Mercedes are doing upgrades or they're not, and what they're doing, and how you describe an upgrade, if it was already in plan, is it an upgrade? Yeah, so that's a bit confusing. But you definitely get the impression that Red Bull are seeing this as an opportunity to win, and will probably push a little bit more than Mercedes regarding upgrades and stuff. But it was one track, and you go back to Paul Ricard, Mercedes were pretty close to winning the Grand Prix. So this week in Silverstone, they could be different. But you start to wonder if Mercedes will need that, however much time that Nigel Mansell used to say that the Silverstone crowd used to give him. And you wonder if it was half a second, or was it probably Nigel Mansell, probably was a second that he said.
Yeah.
But you start to wonder if Mercedes will need a little bit of Silverstone crowd boost for Hamilton.
They might need that, but of course Verstappen's got a... Maybe that's why he was so dominant in Austria, because of the crowd. Yeah, there was a lot of Dutch fans there, wasn't there?
It's like the crazy Dutch, yeah. So
the scenes of them having a rave before the race was just fantastic. Absolutely love it.
There's This is, yeah, I'm just always surprised how many, how they actually seem to fill out these places. Like, you know, for Brits, of, from a British point of view, you've got a fair amount of British fans in normal circumstances where people can travel. There's a fair amount of Brits around Europe watching, but the Dutch seem to just get everywhere. I don't know, everyone's like some sort of, I don't know if they've been F1 drivers in the past, but it seems like they're enjoying the, enjoying Max Verstappen and taking
the
ball.
I suppose, who was the last one? Was it Van? Oh, what is his Vandegaard.
Yeah, Vandegaard was a few years in Caterham. Did he have a year at Caterham?
Yeah, I think he had a year at Caterham, and then
then he was one of the four drivers that turned up at the Australian Grand Prix to race for Sauber, and all claiming they all had a contract. And then he sort of disappeared. I think there's a guy in the noughties. I can't remember his name now.
I mean, there was obviously Jos.
Dornbos?
Dornbos.
Was he Dutch?
Sounds right.
Yeah, because he was in the Spyker, which I think was a Dutch. Was that a Dutch company?
I think it is. If I remember from Top Gear, I'm sure they were Dutch.
Sounds right. One of those ones, various different names, and the Force India, whatever it ended up being. But obviously, probably Verstappen Senior was the one before them. So But yeah, obviously a huge F1 following, and they're definitely enjoying the.
Definitely enjoying it right now. Well, we did a little poll on our Twitter page. And it was in relation to kind of Mercedes struggles, but also Bottas's struggles. And we said, if you vote now, if you were Toto, would you replace Bottas with Russell for Silverstone onwards? Now, this was 58% to 42% said yes, get George in ASAP. The 42% said no, wait until next year. So it was slightly favouring on getting George in the car as soon as possible. But we had TJ Garrison reply to us on Twitter, and he said, I think the car itself is a bigger issue. They should not have these engine power issues and deficits to Red Bull, and their strategy leaves something to be desired. Now, I think that's a really good point. Where have Red Bull suddenly got all this engine power from? Where have Honda suddenly got it from?
Yeah, I remember the start of the season, there's reports saying how much of a push they made being there last year. And I think they've completely redesigned the engine, which was a bit of a risk at the time because it could have gone wrong. But they seem to put a hell of a lot of effort into it, so maybe to win before they leave, and then leave Red Bull with a fairly decent Red Bull engine when they disappear. But it's fairly impressive how far they've come to get ahead of Mercedes. And also, you did worry with a big push to be reliable, but from what we've seen so far, it seems pretty reliable. So hats, as Niki Lauda would do, sort of hats off to Honda for what they've done. Just feels a bit of a shame that they're leaving the sport when they could have all this credit they could be getting next year and the years after.
So. Well, just think back to 2009. They finally put all their efforts on 2009. It was like, right, we're gonna get a good design car, and then that's it. Now we're going to pull out the sport.
Yeah,
Ross Brawn had to come in and take over, and I mean, thank goodness he did, because that car was a winner, and they had it, you know.
And Mercedes, we wouldn't be sitting here probably saying how great Mercedes have been for the last hybrid era.
That's funny, isn't it? Honda come back into the sport and end up having to beat their old team.
Yeah, as I watched before, it's like funny how was the McLaren Mercedes for all those years, and then McLaren, also Mercedes left to build their own team. And then McLaren ended up being annoyed at being just a customer team from Mercedes, and then ended up getting the Honda, which obviously was originally the Mercedes team. But it just seems, also the fact that Brawn year, I think I read once that they put 100 million towards the budget of that year. They got no, didn't really get any credit at all, really. This is the story of Brawn being that one season wonder, but it does seem. It's just a shame, really.
And we want more engine manufacturers on the grid. And when there's new rules to be announced, it seems a bit soon to say, no, we're dropping out.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got new engine rules to be decided and announced. And I mean, who knows? That could really favour loads of manufacturers. And they might suddenly be like, hey, let's come back.
Yeah, exactly. They probably will do, because they always end up going and then they come back sort of so many years later. So what was it? Yeah, so they left in the end of 2008. And what, they come back 2015? 14, 15 going back?
Yeah, 14, it was McLaren Mercedes still, so it must have been
the following year.
15 when they came back from McLaren. Must have been
6 years, so end of this decade, they'll probably be back. There's another team.
Who knows, England could win the Football World Cup or something by then, so you never know. They could win the World Cup and the next Euros and then Honda come back into it. Who knows, we'll see. But speaking of McLaren Mercedes, we need to mention them because they've been driving well. Yes, please. Sorry, I was trying to...
It's heavy, right?
Yep. Thank you. Oh, lovely.
Enjoy your meal, gentlemen.
Brilliant, thank you very much. Cheers. Lovely. Right, our food is here. So we'll pause part one of the podcast because we've got Hunter's chicken and a gourmet beef burger. So yeah, food. Let's do this. We're going to pause here and we'll come back and we'll discuss McLaren Mercedes.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Okay, we're back. We've had a lovely meal. I'm quite full now, but I've still got space for beer, so it's all good. But did you enjoy it, Carl? You had a...
It's very good, yeah. Top quality rush cutters. Not expecting a free meal or anything, but yeah, quality as always. So if you're ever in the Thorpe side of Norwich, you know, pop in. I think a few people have popped in based on our recommendations, haven't they, over the years? So
There was someone who... There was a kid who got his dad to drive miles to come and visit, and he left a note, didn't he? So that worked out well. So,
I'm still listening.
Yeah, I hope you're still listening. If you are, give us a shout on Twitter. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We'll drop the handles for all three at the NRF1. Patreon, patreon.com/NRF1. Go check us out on there, get in touch on there. Was there anything else am I missing? Usual shout outs. I can't remember all the rest of them. I didn't write a script because we're keeping it casual. We're keeping it easy because this is our, as promised, this is our bumper Austria review, but also preview of Silverstone. So getting it all into one. But we were going to talk about McLaren Mercedes before we took the break, and we needed to mention because Lando Norris, he did brilliantly. He finished second in Austria in the Austria Part 2 race, but he had a bit of an argument along the way with a bit of racing, we should just say, with Sergio Perez.
Shoulder barging, I suppose, is the football term into it. But Perez was involved in a lot of it during the week. But
there was a lot of people who were involved in penalties in that race, anyway.
But I watched the videos again. He watched Jody and Palmer's analysis of it before we come here, and I still think it was a bit harsh. And I can't even go back a year before to the Hamilton album, I thought was a bit, because I've always got the impression if you go around the outside of somebody, you are taking a bigger risk. And even Christian Horner said during the Sky commentary, bit of a racing incident. And I mean, it looks worse because there's gravel at this corner, which a lot of corners in Formula 1 isn't gravel, and people can run slightly wide and carry on. I just thought, what's that kind of thing? I mean, I'm no physics expert or engineer or whatever, but I kind of think if you're in the middle of the track, you are braking to hit the apex of the corner and then drift out the quickest line. And if somebody's then suddenly dives down the outside of you, you can't really stop what you're doing, can you?
If you're driving around a corner, you kind of need to keep your eyes on where you're driving out of the corner and not look in your mirror to see who might or might not be there. I mean, if you're looking in your mirror, you're not seeing where you're going, you can mess up anyways. If anything, that's more dangerous.
Yeah, so I just think there's camera angles, and Perez does look slightly ahead as going into a corner, but that could be just because he's breaking later because he's taking a later entry into the corner because he's going around the outside. I'm not too sure about it, and I understand the argument that you want to have allow racing, so you want to allow people to try and make moves around the outside, but I'm always in for my very amateur karting that if you went around the outside somebody and outside the corner, you were taking a risk and that you could be pushed out onto gravel, stones, grass, whatever it is. And I just thought it was, also it's Joe Palmer, just credit him in this, it's been 2 years since they've made that decision based on like running somebody wide. I mean, you had 2 years ago you had Verstappen overtaking Leclerc at the very same track, I mean the turn three, I mean, up the hill to win the race, and he ran Charlie wide. So you like, and it just seemed to be this weekend or the second race that if you ran the outside of somebody and somebody pushed you off, that was a penalty.
I mean, we did see others who could, there was Alonso and George Russell who had a great battle towards the end of the race. Alonso was trying to go around the outside. I think it was the same corner. He went for it, but he couldn't make it stick. I mean, George drove defensively, but Alonso kept it out of the gravel. Now, watching the replays, I kind of felt that Lando kind of, there was still, he left space. It wasn't like he bumped into him and pushed him off. It might have been a tiny bit of tyre contact, but I mean, for me, like you've already said, I thought it was very harsh. But then it was also like, well, if Perez could have got it, he would have been there. It just kind of seemed to me that he was going too fast and he just kind of ran out of track in the end. It was, the car just wouldn't grip anyway, so
that's how it goes. It seems, I think it could possibly be a kind of web as well, because you have just a lot of drivers just hanging around the outside of corners waiting to be pushed off. And if you're at a track where there is no gravel, you know, Abu Dhabi for example, where there's plenty of runoff, you can run wide and carry on, then it could cause issues. Also, it's fair that on that same lap, Lando Norris was the inside of turn one because it's following the safety car, and he ends up, Perez on his outside, and Perez ends up off the track again, but because of turn one he just carried on and followed him up the, because it's tarmac, he just followed him up the thing. But it's kind of exactly the same as the previous one.
Well, that was the other thing for me. I always remember Hamilton and Raikkonen in Spa in 2007 or 8, I can't remember which one it was. But and the rules, you know, Hamilton went behind Raikkonen and then he overtook him into the next corner and they said, oh no, that's not allowed because you had to stay behind him for one corner because you went wide. Now, by those rules, which I might have just missed this over the years, but I don't think they've changed, but by those rules, Perez, by running wide at turn one going into, well, I've just asked my own question, because turn three technically is the next corner, but because turn two is not a corner, but I suppose he was behind at turn two, so okay, maybe that's not the point, but you know what I mean.
The sort of lasting advantage from running wide, so I think that's an incredibly hard job, stewards and that, but you do have to worry sometimes how they look at the rules. And I thought, out of all these running wide penalties, I thought Perez's third one was incredibly harsh, because what we're talking about is that corner six, this is the first left-hander, isn't it, again, start going down the hill. I looked on board for that, and Perez is way ahead of, obviously a decent step ahead of Leclerc. Leclerc just sort of bombs around the outside because he doesn't have to rake as early because he's taking later entry, and then suddenly he's Perez couldn't probably see where he was, so he's just taking a pretty much normal line, and suddenly there's a Ferrari on the outside. Physics doesn't allow him to stop. You can't just stop in the middle of the gate. Oh, sorry, I'll let you through. And as for
the stewards kind of gave themselves that problem, because they kind of took that harsh approach in the first place against Lando. They kind of had to back it up no matter who it was. So in the end, there was like 13 drivers or something at the end of the race were called to the stewards because of the way they were driving, and it was a bit mad.
Lando Norris got penalty points, so he's now got 8 or 9 penalty points.
Yeah. I think three more, he gets the 12, and it's a race ban, isn't it? Yeah. So,
and you're like, well, also, that bit of understanding, because he's been given the penalty in the race, of course, and then he's getting another 2 points for plus that. Like, well, you're giving him the penalty in the race. It's like, you know, football, you know, obviously, top of the moment, but you give a penalty away, you don't then get point deducted as well afterwards. That's the penalty for what you did in that race. And unless you like punt somebody off like Grosjean, then maybe that's different. But a little 5 second penalty, which are, you know, these, which is the lowest penalty they can give. Do you know to give penalty points as well?
Well, we weren't the only ones to think it was harsh, because again we did another Twitter poll. And we simply asked, was Norris's penalty deserved? 11% said yes, 89% said no. So the vast majority of people really said no, wasn't a penalty. And there was kind of real outcry as well, because the fans just wanted to see racing. And I mean, the amount of penalties, the way that they had handled it, you know, Stewart has handled it, like we said, it's a difficult job. But it didn't seem right. And we need to give a shout out to our own Dan Springle here as well. Because he said on the pod group, kind of reading through on our WhatsApp group, he kind of went through that and he said, look, reading the rules, the stewards followed the rules, even though it's harsh, that they did follow the writing of the rules. So you think, does something need to be changed? But we see so many people go to the outside and it doesn't end up in an accident or running wide or a penalty. I mean,
yeah, Dan's right, there's the rules and they follow the rules. But then I didn't know this until I watched the Jolyon Palmer analysis of it, that that penalty hasn't been given for 2 years. So surely there's been incidents before where people have been ran wide trying to overtake on the other side. So yeah, I suppose they, I don't know, they may have brought the rule in because grey areas in sport and rules then sometimes creates more problems. So maybe they tried to be black and white. But I just think that's, the rules need to be adjusted. That's the way they're going to look at the rules, and that's the way they're going to, you know, use that to punish drivers. Then I think that's far too harsh. But who knows?
We'll see. But I think that pretty much wraps up Austria. We'll do a couple of the awards just thrown out there for both races, across both races. Who was your driver of the weekends?
I think I've given obviously praised Norris a lot and throughout the season, but we're going to have to go to Max Verstappen, I think, just for domination really over 2 weekends. He's got the quickest car, but you know, Perez wasn't near him and he took advantage of the fastest car, and yeah, he was a standout for me over the two.
Yeah, you can't argue it. It was something there for him that weekend. So we smashed it, and I think we might as well jump straight ahead and look at Silverstone, British Grand Prix, because I mean, obviously we're building up to it now. There's been a lot of announcements along the way. So Lewis has his new contract. We already mentioned Lando's new contract. It's another British driver confirmed. Lewis has a new Mercedes contract. Is that a good move, do you think, going to next year?
Yeah, I think it's good for everybody. I think it's good for Hamilton. Sounds like he's got a bit more money than this year's deal, which is obviously good for him. He remains in a good team. It's good for Formula 1 to have a 7-time world champion still in the sport and still competitive. You know, racing against the young guys coming through, and he's sort of the older generation. And
no more distractions now for Hamilton. He can just concentrate on racing for this year at least.
Yeah, and he seems even more motivated from the sound of it. That, you know, Mercedes being, you know, second quickest car at the moment, he seems more motivated to race. And maybe it's good for Mercedes. They've got stability, they've got the global brand that is Lewis Hamilton, which helps. So yeah, it's good for everybody, and just be interesting to see who will be in the car alongside him next year.
Yeah, definitely. So that brings us on to the other gossip. So this is our gossip section. We don't have a lot of sting for this, but you know, gossip section. Shh, that'll do. But we already mentioned him, George Russell.
He's been linked with the Mercedes seat constantly
since he got into Formula One.
Since Formula One.
Yeah.
And there was rumours that he would be announced as a Mercedes driver this weekend for next season. So driver for next season this weekend, which he said in, I think, F1 Nation podcast, nothing's been signed, nothing's been agreed. There is no announcement.
Which, I mean, that's sort of the rumour built up because it probably not, you know, he's a two British driver, you know, it's the second one, George Russell, and a British Grand Prix, but yeah, I still don't think Mercedes have made their mind up. I mean, they've probably got the Lewis Hamilton one done, and now it's kind of like, okay, now we'll work out who's going to be there. I think for an ideal world you'd want, you know, being, you know, British motorsport fans and Norfolk Formula 1 fans, having a Norfolk driver in a very quick car would be good. And also, I think for Mercedes, their long term, obviously Hamilton's what, 36 to be 37 next year, he's gonna, for the long term future of Mercedes, you probably want somebody like Russell in there. And also, you also assume if Russell's not gonna get a Mercedes seat soon, then he's gonna start looking elsewhere. I mean, even Helmut Marko sort of come out a few times. Yeah. Anybody would want him. He's quick, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's Red Bull, Red Bull boss coming up to say, we want Russell, but we can't believe he's going to be released from his Mercedes contract. Now, George said in an interview the other day, asking about next season, he said, whatever happens, I'll be driving a car powered by Mercedes. So there's obviously three on the grid right now with Williams, Aston Martin, Williams, Aston Martin, McLaren, and then Mercedes themselves. He's not likely to go to McLaren. You wouldn't have thought Aston Martin.
No, I mean, obviously McLaren is Lando Norris three-year deal. I mean, Danny Rick signed a three-year deal going there, so that's pretty wrapped up, isn't it?
And you wouldn't cancel any of theirs to get George in. I think they're both just as good right now. And
so I mentioned how good Lando's doing, and Danny Rick's got to be given a bit more time. Aston Martin, I assume Vettel signed a reasonably long couple of years, probably 3 years. And,
3 years sounds right.
Yeah, and the other lad is the son's boss. So
yeah. And to be fair, Aston Martin, Vettel's doing a good job. He's driven well. He's picked up as the season's gone on.
Yeah.
Stroll, kind of, he's shown it at times, but then he's also not really shown too much.
So God, basically, you think he sort of qualifies really well and then races really well and sort of lower end of the points. You think, oh, and then next race he'll go out in Q1. You think, oh. There is some of that. He's been average. But he's not been bad enough to lose your seat when you're a favourite of the boss. I think it's either going to be Williams or it's going to be Mercedes. It's a big decision for Mercedes to. That's what's been working, but then do they need something a little bit extra now because they may not be out there?
Well, they didn't put Ocon in the car when they had the chance. Ocon dropped out for a season before he ended up with Renault, now Alpine. But I can't imagine George dropping out. I think if George, for whatever reason, didn't get a contract, didn't want to stay at Williams, I think there'd be several other teams suddenly jumping in. I mean, you can see
Red Bull. They got full seats, well, three seats really, haven't they? Obviously, Max has wrapped up, but you got AlphaTauri seats.
And George is the last of that generation of drivers to come into the sport. Him, Lando, and Albon. He's the last one to get a shot in a big team, you'd say. And he was the guy who won the F2 championship, who many would argue is probably the best driver of the three of them.
He dominated in a way at the end. I mean, so Lando has sort of tailed off a bit towards the sort of second half of that year. Also Lando is, I think, 2 years younger. He's a little bit younger than
him. Yeah, I mean, I remember Lando driving in the British F4 championship, which was like on the British drawing car circuit. They were them, and I mean, so he's kind of, Lando came through quickly, so obviously there's that argument, but George is the last one to get a chance in a top race seat, and the way he's driven, you'd say he's proven himself good enough.
Well, it would be good for, I mean, I like Bottas. He's a good driver. He's not the top driver, and that's why he gets beat by Hamilton. But he's competing against a guy who's statistically the best driver ever to sit in an F1 car. So that's always hard to judge from that. But you just would love to see George Russell alongside him. And also, yeah, as I mentioned earlier, the future of Mercedes, if they get something in there to then take over as team leader when, or you know, even while Hamilton's maybe there, he can do that. But we shall see.
And I hope George does go to Mercedes personally. I think he'd do a smashing job there. Was there any other gossip we missed? I missed from Silverstone, build up to Silverstone.
We've also got full crowds at Silverstone this weekend, which
140,000 they're saying max capacity. So that'll be great to see the fans back there.
Obviously we're being a bit biased, but we've also been there. It is a hell of a weekend for British motorsport fans. But I think also Silverstone pretty much admitted that they needed this because they're obviously financial big trouble. So it's great for them. So we'll see if Lewis Hamilton does any crowd surfing this time. COVID rules, probably won't be allowed to, will he?
Yeah, I was going to say probably all in masks and stuff, but no, it'll be interesting to see, and I hope it'll be a good race. And what are you expecting? I mean, you were saying earlier it's going to be a scorcher. Do you think that's going to change the racing? Do you think Mercedes are going to come alive?
I think Red Bull will probably do a little bit better in the warm weather.
Red Bull have looked at whatever the weather's been, they've kind of looks solid. I mean, we haven't seen the wet weather yet, so we can't decide.
Things have changed. It could be,
I mean, we all know what Britain's like with the weather. I mean, they said it was supposed to be pretty rainy today, I think, and I mean, it's not been too bad. I don't think I haven't seen it rain at all, but
it can easily change. So, which might be quite, but you have to say at the moment, Red Bull look the favourite based on that, but. Hamilton's very good round Silverstone. Was it seven times he's won?
Yeah, seven times, because he keeps in the Channel 4 ad about it, which says could Hamilton win his eighth British Grand Prix?
Okay,
so seven times.
And as we mentioned, the crowd support may boost him along, but it always seems that Red Bull will have a quick car and Mercedes sort of turn up at the racetrack and go, we don't really know what car's going to be like this weekend. And
Mercedes seem to do that. They go into practice one and they're a bit shaky. We're missing some time, we go into practice two, they find a bit more, and then suddenly practice three qualifying, it's like, okay, we know what we're doing now. I mean, this week they can't afford any of that, because practice two sets the grid for Formula One's first ever sprint race.
So we practice one as normal, the hour, and then at 6 o'clock our time is qualifying / which would normally be practice two. So you're not gonna, if practice one goes horribly wrong, you're on the back foot. It'd be interesting to see if there's any, I imagine that's probably why they've done it, to see if they can get any unusual results for qualifying.
Well, we've seen the AlphaTauris look pretty quick in practice. They've really shown up, so you know if it's a circuit that suits their car, they could surprise a lot of people.
They're normally quick out of the box. And Gasly's always seems to be 7th or 8th, isn't he, in qualifying?
And they were saying about the sprint race as well, it's, I think I read today, it's 17 laps you can choose any tire you like, and it's one set, so a lot is going to depend on, I don't know which compound, so whether it's C2, 3, 4s Pirelli's are bringing, I'm not sure yet.
I imagine it'll be the toughest ones, because with the blowouts last year, didn't we?
Yeah.
I also got the new rear tyres as well, I think, this weekend.
They agreed the new tyres, so we've got those new ones.
Which, to a lot of teams, I can't really tell the difference, but there probably is a little bit of difference. But, because it's 100 kilometres, isn't it? This is a third of the normal race distance. So, my first thoughts are, Are you just going to kind of get a decent position on the grid and go, well, what's this front run sprint race and go, well, I'm second, I'm front row, this will do. But yeah, may not, it's worth a try. And it's not like in previous years I've chucked in new qualifying rules at the start of the season and two or three races later, going, well, this isn't working, I've got to change it back. So they're trying something, fair enough. But also, you should think about Valtteri Bottas for Hulk, because he is Mr. Friday, isn't he? Well, George Russell is Mr. Saturday, but Valtteri Bottas is normally Mr. Friday, isn't he? So
yeah, it'll be interesting. And of course, the big thing is, it just going to be a snake of drivers following each other around, or will someone say, you know what, I'm going to go and make the move? Because I'm sure someone's going to go for a move, it's not going to work out, and they're going to probably end up essentially qualifying five positions further back than what they otherwise would have. And you can probably be sure someone will take a risk and it'll backfire, because that's what Formula 1, that's what happens in Formula 1.
I'm thinking Yuki Tsunoda. I can see him going, you know, full on
youth and inexperience,
and they'll blame somebody else because he does get a bit angry, obviously. Tsunoda.
Where's Ericsson when you need him?
Blame Ericsson. I mean, one of these first IndyCar, they've always slightly off topic, but I think, I'm sure I saw him when he's in his Husky chocolate, which Husky chocolate have provided us with free goods before. But it was, so I think Tsunoda might be, he might take a few risks. I'm trying to think of drivers that would take risks, really. But
I'm sure the Williams guys would, because they haven't really got much to lose.
Yeah, because of Russell going for it. Latifi will probably spin, because he often does spin.
Mazepin, I mean, you know what you can expect from him.
Yeah. Gosh. Poor guy. Every time you see him, he's having it lapped when he's off track, isn't he?
And the thing that stands out for me, going back to the tyres, obviously not sure what actual compounds they're going to bring yet, but you think 17 laps, we've seen soft tyres last that long, okay, but then we've also seen soft tyres fall apart after 10 laps. Now a sprint race, you're going to want to go as quick as possible. Silverstone is easy to overtake, you've got DRS zones, so so you're going to just have to go quick. Would someone, you know, I guess if it's a bit of an unknown, would they say the soft tyres were lasting 15 laps, would they say, let's go for the softs, have more grip and risk them falling off, or should we just go for the mediums and just blitz it? It's the strategy, I think, could come into it quite a lot as well.
Hopefully it will be between optimum for a soft tyre and the medium tyre.
Let's hope the soft tyres last about 13, 14 laps.
Yeah, quick start, and then the medium runners sort of come back.
Yeah, oh, that'd be something.
We can hope, but I'm kind of looking forward to something different. Just leave work on Friday, go home straight and watch qualifying. So and the evening sunshine of Northamptonshire. So
I guess evening temperatures could change everything as well.
True.
And how are they doing it? So the sprint race sets the grid for the main race.
Yeah.
Now, so do you have to start on the same compound of tyres, or how's that working?
No, I think you can get a free allocation of tyres.
Okay.
So, yeah, which is a bit of a shame. Yeah, they could have done. Yeah, that'd be interesting. You'll start the tyres you finish on.
Maybe not like the same ones, but that compound at least. Yeah,
but might be something they broke me in. So I think. I'm intrigued to see how drivers will take it. Actually, thinking another driver that might take risks is old Charlie Leclerc, because he likes a good, you know, he takes a few risks when he's not driving into the side of his fellow countryman down a straight. I think Kimi Raikkonen nearly took it the front off, but still a good driver of the day. He might be another one, but I'm just intrigued to see what. Ideally, you'd want like Verstappen and Hamilton to have some sort of slight collision into.
Could you imagine?
That'd
be something. 19th, 20th on the grid, having to work their way back up. Wow,
sprint race and just absolutely
So, what's happening on the Saturday as well? Is there anything, or is that just nothing?
There's a practice 2.
Okay.
Saturday morning, and then obviously the sprint race. What is that? 4:30? I think that's quite late on Saturday. I think 5:00, something like that. But because I think they go to Parc Fermé when qualifying starts, you can't do a huge amount of changes in second practice. So there'll be a few cars that aren't ideally set up, which might make it interesting as well. But I think if you... Yeah, the simulator drivers will earn their money, I think, sort this week.
Yeah, definitely. And interestingly, you're going to think, lap records, are they going to count on this? Because in a sprint race, if it's still classified as a race and the lap records count, they could go 3 seconds lap faster than normal because fuel loads are going to be so much lower when they've got good tyres.
True. I assume they won't, but because it is a they call it sprint qualifying. Doesn't have trying to avoid the word race. I also did hear that they're a bit old school, the celebrations, that they're going to go on, I think they're going on the back of a truck, like the old Reefs they used to wear.
Oh wow.
And they're going to do they're not going to do a podium, they're going to do that sort of back of a truck.
That would be great to see. As long as I don't know, maybe we can get Kimmy up there and just crack open a beer and yeah, do full on James Hunt.
Yes, you driving tomorrow, Kimmy? Oh yeah, feel bad. I think Silverstone still crowd will enjoy that. This is a quite long lap as well, so the old bloke in the old truck will have to get his foot down the old hanger straight with him, chugging along. But something different, isn't it? So
I look forward to it. Now I've been talking about it, I'm more excited than I was for it. So but yeah, we've obviously got the main feature race as well, which will be the usual Silverstone excitement. What are your expectations? Do you think it's going to be kind of business as usual? Do you think anyone else is going to suddenly turn up out of nowhere? Could Ferrari suddenly turn up again?
Could do. I'm trying to think where they've been. All that. No, I think
where were they strong? Was it Baku and Monaco they got?
Yeah, I think they're sort of slow corners. They're pretty good. So Silverstone doesn't have many of them. So I can see them struggling, to be honest. I think Norris will be strong again.
That McLaren had some straight line speed in Austria, yeah. So that would be useful if they have that around Silverstone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's got a funny thing. Something unusual is going to happen in the race. I think they're going to be an unusual winner. Could be Norris. Could be. Yeah, I think something. Yeah, I got. Because we've had sort of Verstappen's won four in the last five. So I think that's right. So yeah, something different we can have this weekend. Different winner. No idea who, but something. Yeah.
Maybe would be
non Mercedes / Red Bull win. I'll go for that.
Non Mercedes / Red Bull. That sounds interesting. So, I could throw up a few teams in there. It's been so close.
So maybe Giovinazzi will continue the Italian triumph on UK shores.
It really is an Italian summer this summer. They've smashed the Wimbledon, smashed the Euros. What was the other thing they won? They won something else. I forgot what it was. I can't remember. I've forgotten. But they did something. Cool. But I look forward to it. It should be a good race. And we should say business will resume with regards to the podcast. This has just been a bit more of a casual one and a kind of bumper post-Austria, pre-Britain podcast. And I hope you've enjoyed it. It's nice to be back in the pub. And I think we'll be back in the usual process with the podcast, with the Patreon podcast, with all the added bonuses and all the rest of that after Silverstone, when we've got more time to fit it all in, because it's been a busy few weeks. But I think that's everything.
I think we've covered most things. Probably something I've forgotten. I'll get in the car and now I should mention that, but at the moment that's all I can think of.
Well, we will be back, which will be E283, and we'll try and get back in the Rush Cutters again, because it's been good.
Yeah, feels like the old F1, NRF1 days.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
that's
definitely.
Not true, but yeah, it feels good to be back.
Definitely. Well, thank you everyone for listening. This has been the NRF1 podcast. Thank you for your continued support. Thank you from me. Thank you from Kyle.
Cheerio.
And we'll see you next time. Bye for now.